At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations stitched together one story at a time. My name's Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and this is part two of my conversation with Claire Vocal Siedemeyer, a textile artist whose storytelling through stitch is both deeply personal and quietly radical. In this part of our Needle Exchange, Claire shares the evolution of her practice from stitched offerings to memory quilts made of baby socks, family fabric, and even her husband's old diapers or nappies. We talk about how cloth carries meaning, how art sneaks into parenting, and how stitching became Claire's way of documenting her life. We also talk about the role of online communities in shaping her journey and what happens when others start stitching along with you. For more on using everyday materials and domestic memory in textile work, be sure to check out Needle Exchanges 79 and 80 with Vanessa Marr, the founder of the Domestic Dusters Project. And if you're moved by Claire's reflections, be sure to follow Mr. X-Stitch on Instagram, share this episode with a friend, and even start your own jar of stitch prompts. Oh yes, that's something to look forward to, and you'll find out more about that in the show. I hope you enjoy it. It was lovely talking to Claire. She's such a nice person. It's really lovely to see her project start to snowball and turn into something even more profound. So we'll be back next week with somebody else from the world of needlework. But until then, enjoy the show. I remember Owen Kelly, I interviewed him, and he's got this thing called a memory skirt, which is lots and lots of scraps of things that over time. It's almost like it shows a kind of history of shirts and items and textiles that have been quite significant in his life. And I think the skirt's maybe taken like 25, 30 years to put together. But again, it's another interesting form of documentary, isn't it? And that's what I'm taking from a lot of what you're doing, is you're just, it's just textiles as documentary. Mm-hmm. How you present that, the ways of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for putting some weight into those things, even though, you know, especially if they're things that you can reuse somehow. My mother-in-law gave me a pile of my husband's diapers, like literally, okay. like the diaper cloth to use as rags. Like, she's thinking I'm going to clean the house with them. But it's like really a nice material to stitch with. So I've used that diaper cloth, and I don't know. I mean, I just put one in a quilt last week. Like, it's nice cloth, and I like that. Like, you can say, yeah, my husband's diapers are on this quilt. Like, I don't know. It's weird, but
it's not
it
weird.
Also,
no,
like,
it's not weird. It's only going to be weird to him. Let's face it. He's going to be like a little bit skewiff about it.
He's okay with it. My mother-in-law I have not told, because she would be horrified. So. But little did she know that those claws would not be used for cleaning like she probably wants me to do. But
and with your, so the size of your quilts, they sort of quilty size, are we talking like 4 foot, 3 foot, that kind of size?
Most of them not. The biggest one I made is probably maybe 5 by 5, but only because on purpose. I made that one in 2023 as a summer diary of my kids going back to Wisconsin, where I'm from in the US, and spending time with all of the people that we love there. All of them signed a little piece of scrap. So I found all the scraps from my parents' basement. I basically raided their basement the week we got there, took all their old clothes that they didn't need anymore, and cut them up for this quilt. And then so everyone signed a piece, and then on there I embroidered like the museums we went to, the farm, you know, all of the things that we did that summer that were special to us. And that one was purposefully big because I wanted it, you know, as a like memory that we bring home, and they can lay on the couch and like snuggle under all of these people and places from my home, right? But the rest of the quilts besides that one are pretty much smaller. you know, they're usually about maybe a meter by a meter or so like that.
Mm. Yeah, they do. I mean, they look lovely. Again, I'd encourage people to have a look at them on your website because they just, I mean, you could make prints of them. I think some of them are really beautiful. And I think that there's, I don't know, like, whether it's like the naive thing. Did you do, like, when you were at school, did you do any illustration? Did you do any of those kind of things?
No, I did go to a fine arts elementary school. that's like first to fifth grade. But it's a public school. It was like, I mean, today you would call it a charter school. Like, it was just like a lottery system. And I happened to get in there. And it was an amazing school because we had not just visual arts, but we had drama and dance. And we painted a mural on the side of the like auditorium while I was there. It was an amazing school. But literally, like, that was only the only kind of formal like art training I had until I discovered photography later. But
you're just feeling it out. I think that's what's incredible in that case. If you stop and think about, and I'm trying not to sound like I'm talking down to you or whatever, but you've been around 10 minutes and you've been doing, and like the quilts are beautiful, like the hand stitching, the choice of design, like the one with all the hands just reaching across. There's some just real simple concepts. I mean, do you spend a lot of time planning those things out, or are you still just kind of feeling it out? Because I feel like that's quite a thing with you.
Well, the ones with the hands I did plan because it was very specific. It was like for my parents' 50th anniversary, wedding anniversary, and it was like COVID. So we couldn't go there. We couldn't visit them. Mm. So it was like a way to send them our hugs, right? But usually it's more like, again, just like on a larger scale of what I did small with my Stitch Stories. Like, it's just like an emotion to explore, a story you want to tell. I made a quilt about like a summation of the year, you know, just some sort of like way to express a story or a feeling. More than a planned out idea.
It's just very clear storytelling. You know, it, in some ways it reminds me a bit of children's illustration when that's done really well, and you don't have to have a lot of words, you don't have to have a lot of story, because you just allow, I don't know, you allow a lot of space for feeling in your work. I think there's just a lot of like people can just fall into the spaces or something. You're annoyingly good. I think that's but this is you're still slotting this in around what, like a day job and kids and all of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, well, not a typical day job. I'm a freelance editor, so yeah, it's kind of, you know, filling in here and there, and it's no 9 to 5. But yeah, I mean, I work a little bit when my kids are gone at school, which is not long in Germany. I mean, my daughter's usually home by 11:15, which is rough time-wise, but yeah, and then I just like do my stitching in the evenings. That's basically the only time I have.
How do the kids, have they tried textiles? Have you been able to pass it?
Yeah, all of them. I mean, I think it was a year and a half ago for Christmas, I gave them all like a little bag full of embroidery floss and things. And they took to it at first. Like they made little like stuffed animals that they had hand stitched. Sometimes they like surprise you, at least two of them. Like sometimes they surprise you and they want to make stuff, which is always really exciting for me. And, you know, of course you want to like encourage that, but you also don't want to push it because then they'll be totally turned off, you know? So, but yeah, it's exciting. One of my sons is really into like these, you know, I don't know if they have the same in England, but in Germany, like the math is always done on these like grid handwriting papers.
Okay.
To like squares. Mm-hmm. And he makes these like square paintings and they're amazing. And he's like makes them compulsively all the time. And they're totally symmetrical, except when they're not. They're like really interesting. They would all be amazing quilts. So I'm always kind of like trying to see if maybe he'd get into cross stitching, which he's tried on a very minor level. But I just think like as a designer, I've even actually made fabric from his like little square painting designs, which was really fun.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I was always happy with the intersection as well between like cross stitch design and pixel art, because, you know, there are loads of fantastic artists out there who've never done cross stitch in their life, but they're just used to working in little squares. And sometimes you get these people who just do these magnificent things because they've just wrapped their head around it and it is just little pieces. And I was thinking as well, I'm pretty sure there's a guy on Instagram who I've seen who like gets oil paintings. Maybe there's some oil paintings and some flowers, and he kind of sticks a little grid over the top and then paints over the oil paintings and turns all those into little squares and that kind of thing. He's just like, that's very satisfying. I struggle with Flora, who's my oldest, who doesn't listen to the podcast, thankfully. But I went and tried to teach her beavers class how to do cross stitch, and she was the worst student because she was convinced that she already knew how to do it. Why did she have to listen to me? Because I'm her dad, you know. I was just like, everybody else is doing really good things, so it's just like, I know how to do it, and I'm just sitting there just going. But you know, and I'm always as well, I'm always hung up on this idea of the things we do as parents that just are the way things are for kids. Like, I can remember in my house when I was growing up, my mum had made this sign on the toilet door, the bathroom door, and it just said, toodaloo, toodaloo. And it was just there, and it was just a thing. So you just don't know any different. And then I think about all the things that we do and the fact that, like, there's all this needlework around the house and that kind of thing, and the girls just accept it as being. And sometimes I reflect on that, and you just hope that regardless of what I try and teach them to do, that stuff will just kind of layer in there somehow.
Mm-hmm. You're planting seeds somehow. Mm-hmm.
I hope so. It's, it weighs on me quite a lot, that really. So do you have like a space for making?
Yeah, I have kind of like the top floor of our house. My family's been kind enough to let me have this corner. So I have a space. I mean, it's not just for making, but for like doing all the other things, you know, and working and whatever. But honestly, though, most of my making is like done in the evenings, which means I'm like sitting with my husband in, you know, on the couch watching TV or whatever. So, but definitely like the times that I get in this space and quiet and alone are like absolutely the times that I need for like the thinking behind, you know, I can do all the like work, like the handwork in the evenings, but I need like some quiet time in this space to get the ideas and to figure out what I'm going to do first.
And have you got a list of ideas? Have you got plans for the future?
Oh, there's always a million. Yes, there's always like so many quilts you want to make, so many projects you want to do. It's hard to kind of, especially this year that I don't have any parameters. It's been really hard to kind of focus myself, you know. And also because I'm so used to working small that I find myself, I'm impatient with like big things. Like I'm taking a quilt making course this year and, you know, quilts are big, but it's like, I'm, you know, working on the quilt top and I'm already, you know, thinking 2-3 quilts ahead, like, but I want to be making that one. So it's hard because you have to finish, you know, you have to actually quilt the thing after you make the top, right? I'm used to making the stitching part and then the quilting. It's always a balance of how do I like slow my ideas down enough that I can keep up and finish something rather than just like starting 10 new things,
Yeah. Do you think if you did a quilt that was made of 100 pieces, you might be satisfied because you get loads of you get 100 wins before you have to put the thing together?
I think you're onto something. I think that's a brilliant idea. Yeah. There's a quilter named Amanda Nadig, and she made this incredible quilt where she like was sitting with her son in a waiting room and made a grid on a piece of paper and she and her son filled it in with like 100 different doodles of like, how can you do 100? And then she like turned those doodles into a quilt, and it's incredible. So yeah, absolutely. I think like doing something like that, that incorporates like some sort of, you know, tiny pieces with a bigger piece would be amazing.
Just trying to wrap the dimensions in my brain of what 52 pieces, how you can arrange 52 pieces, because it's definitely with, I feel like 2026 you're going to have to do another 52 thing. You can always feel like you've had a year off or something. What was it like then? Like you said, you started having people who would like stitch offerings with you. Did that happen organically?
Yeah, I posted at the beginning of the year, I posted the jar, right, that I had come up with and said, hey, if anybody's interested, I can pull a prompt every week. So I made that public, like every week I would, on a Monday, I would say like the prompt is yellow or whatever it is. There were people, a lot of people started off, and there were some though that went through to the end. I mean, it was really amazing, and it's just fun to see, you know, the same prompt in totally different people's perspective. And some people just used the jar of ideas like in their own way and didn't follow along like week by week. But it was really exciting to see that kind of make it more of a cumulative or collaborative like project together.
Yeah. I wonder again whether you feel there's a sort of responsibility there, because I know that that happened with like Diana Raymar and her Tiny Pricks project. You know, that started out as being something that she just did for herself, getting out of her system, and then has now got to a point when people are sending them in, you know, Betsy Greer, all the craftivist campaigns, to be honest, a lot of them snowball like that. I just wonder whether that's something that you're conscious of, whether it's something you want to embrace.
Well, it's not something like intentional, really, but I mean, I'd be happy to embrace such a thing. You know, it is, I think, you know, were it not for like the online community, I would not even be a quilter, I'm sure. I would not have learned to stitch in the first place. Like all of that I was exposed to via Instagram or whatever online. Like I'd never had any training in that any other way. So I am 100% a proponent of like the power of community. And I mean, same with my husband. Like I wouldn't have met him. We met through you know, back in the days before Instagram, there was Flickr, and we were like both like black and white film enthusiasts, and that's how we met. You know, that's how I ended up in Germany. So I think creative communities are really impressive. I think since COVID, and now that, you know, I can talk to you online, like these things are very recent occurrences. The world is getting ever smaller. And so, yeah, I think that's exciting and I'd be happy to embrace that even more.
Okay, you heard it here. Just find Claire online, send her your offerings. I've forgotten about Flickr. You sort of forget about it, isn't it? It's funny how important these things were. Flickr was so good. I don't even know if it's still around anymore.
I think it is, but I don't think it's... It's just not what it used to be. Yeah, it's a sad story.
Mm. It's so funny. The other day I was, because we've got this art space that we've opened, and we had someone who came and did work experience with us. And it turned out that my blog is older than her. And I was just sitting there being like, hang on, what? That doesn't make any sense. But then it just gets to be thinking about like, yeah, like Flickr. And, you know, there used to be a message board place called Craftster, which is where I first found like my people. It was the same sort of thing. It was like in 2007, 2008, that kind of thing. It's just, I don't know. I love the fact that you email on Flickr. I read some friends once. I'm going off on a tangent here. But there's a mum whose son is in the same class as my daughter, and she met her husband online. And I was like, where did you meet him online? You know, like Match.com or something like that. She was like, no, Words with Friends.
Oh, yeah. Really?
I was like, wow. That's not a place you expect to do a bit of flirty banter. But there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a good one. Right, let's go for some tough questions now that I've picked all about your creativity. So you spend a lot of time stitching while watching telly. You're in Germany, so I don't know. How does German telly work? It's in German.
Oh, yeah, we don't watch German telly. It's all streaming. All like, yeah.
That was going to be awkward. Do you have a favorite TV show? Should we start there? Or what was the last good one you watched?
Let me think. Well, we're watching The Bear right now, which is intense, but incredible.
Series 4?
We haven't gotten there yet. We always like re-watch the previous series before we get to the new one, so don't tell me anything. I haven't gotten there yet. We're still in 3. No,
three,
don't.
Three. Oh, have you watched season 3 before?
Yeah.
Didn't you feel like it was a bit like...
Yes. I have to say I like it better the second time I'm watching it than the first time. Like, I appreciate it a little bit more now. Mm. But yeah, the first time we saw it, we were like, this season sucks. Like, season 2 was so incredible that season 3 was just like, eh.
Season 3, you sort of get to the end of season 3 and you don't feel like you've gone any further than the start of season 3. Like, I've seen that happen in other season 3s of other things as well. Season 4 is not too bad. I'm going to spoil something. You get to see Carmi smile at least once.
Oh, okay. That's definitely a step up for sure.
That's a big spoiler. What about films? Got a favorite film?
Well, you know what? The New York Times just did a recent like list your favorite films of the last 25 years, so they are fresh in my mind. If I have to pick of all time, I think I would have to say West Side Story, just because,
like the classic.
The classic. Yeah, I mean, I was very skeptical of the new one, but I have to say it's not as bad as I expect. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty exhilarating.
But nothing beats the original. Of my list, I was looking at my list of 25, or 10 from the last 25 years, and the one that I think probably no one has heard of, which is why I feel like I should give it a shout out, is a movie called The 20-Year-Old Version, not like V-E-R-S-I-O-N.
Okay, okay.
And it's incredible. It's a, like a semi-autobiographical story about a woman, Radha Blank is her name, and she like kind of was like a big deal, top 30, under 30, like playwright, and then she kind of fizzled and was teaching, which, you know, my background is in teaching, so I understand that. And then she decides to like reinvent herself as a middle-aged woman pushing 30, and she tries to become a rapper. And it's like also, it's filmed in black and white. It's like such a, like, it just feels like you're watching someone's autobiography. It's also filmed in the neighborhood that I used to teach in Brooklyn. So it feels very like relevant. And it's an incredible movie. It's really, really good. And I did not get enough heralding as far as I'm concerned. So I'm like, yeah.
I'm gonna ask for a bit of therapy here then, because I don't always take black and white films seriously. I think historically, because they were just all the old films. But obviously, mm-hmm. you like black and white photography. Mm-hmm. Should I show compassion to black and white films? And have you got any black and white film recommendations?
Oh, absolutely. You absolutely should show compassion. Yes. I mean, I think it just allows you even more to focus on the story, right? It's just like not about all the extra bling and whatever. It's like the antithesis of Wes Anderson, who I also love, but it's just like there's no gimmicks. It's just like the raw and true story. And that's like very much the kind of the ethos of this movie. Also, Roma was another amazing one recently. Also black and white, right? But it's just like it's focusing on the story, the cinematography. Like they're just beautiful movies.
Yeah,
absolutely. Black and white deserves another chance.
Okay, I will. I completely agree with you. And it's one of those ones, you know, like when you know you should know better, when you know you should do better. Like I know that there will be powerful story. That's probably half of the problem, isn't it? Is these days you get used to films that you don't really have to pay a lot of attention to be honest, because you're sitting there doing a bit of cross-stitching. Heaven forbid there's a film with subtitles. I don't know how you feel about those, but it's pretty impossible to watch them while you're stitching. Mm.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It is really hard. It has to be a really good one for me to like sacrifice and I have to wear like two pairs of glasses to be able to stitch.
Okay.
So it has to be something really, really good for me to do that.
I was really struck by Roma. I remember thinking about Roma for some time afterwards. There's like some really long tracking shots and all that sort of thing, wasn't it? The cinematography. Are there any like black and white films? Not like, you know, like, I don't know. I was going to say Casablanca or like It's a Wonderful Life. None of those ones. But I mean, are there any films where you're just like, this one's like spot on? Oh,
I'm trying to think. I'm like totally blanking about any except those two. Like those two.
I watched 12 Angry Men. That was good as well. That was a good one.
Or I think that TV show Ripley, that was also shot in black and white. And that was also very good.
Yeah. I mean, I did a bunch of work with some students recently and we were just talking about like A-level students and that sort of thing. And I was just like, if in doubt, just do something in black and white because it's automatically a bit more arty. That's fair. Music then. Do you listen to music while you're working?
No, I never do, only because, like I said, I'm working in the evenings usually. During the day, if I ever get a quiet moment in my studio and my kids are not home, I'm so happy to just have a little bit of quiet that I usually just stick. I was like thinking about the music thing and I'm like, honestly, the only thing I ever listen to these days is like whatever my kids are listening to. So it's like a lot of movie soundtracks, which I mean, thankfully, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda makes a really good movie soundtrack.
Certainly does. Yeah.
But that's like the soundtrack of my life these days.
Can you sing The Family Madrigal?
Oh, totally. I won't, but I totally can. Yeah. Or the Mufasa soundtrack. That one's really, really excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Or what is it? I think I've seen Moana once, but thanks to a little playlist that's on my phone, I can pretty much do the rap from Your Welcome without trying too hard or whatever. You know? Just kind of goes.
That's impressive.
Do you have Bluey? Have you ever watched Bluey?
Oh, God. I love Bluey. Yes. I have two. My two boys are kind of like towing the line of we're too old for Bluey, but my daughter is totally into it. And I mean, it's really hard to not like get all teary-eyed when you watch Bluey most of the time. I love it.
That's true. My Flora's 8, and on Father's Day, she told me she didn't really want to watch Bluey anymore. I was like, how can you do that on my special
Father's
day?
Day.
Yeah, I know. Like a triple blow that was. There's three Bluey albums, and I have them all on vinyl. And on Record Store Day 3 years ago, I think it was, I got the second one, Dance Mode, which is like, I think it's like the third most expensive record in my collection or something ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, honestly. Oh, wow. It's just awesome. Like, it turns out I've got three Bluey albums. I've got a Hey Dougie album, which is another cartoon dog show. It's not that great. But then I've got seven albums by Vince Guaraldi, who was the guy that did the music for Charlie Brown and Peanuts. Vince
Totally. I love him. Yes.
So I think approximately 7% of my entire record collection is revolving around cartoon dogs.
Okay. Well,
just seems to be a thing. That seems to be one of my tropes or whatever. Have you got a favorite album?
Well, I think if I had to pick, like, over my life, like, what affected me the most, I would have to say Smith's Louder Than Bombs, just because that was such a, like, you know, quintessential adolescent, you're allowed to, like, live in your angst kind of album that just, yeah, got me through.
that sound. I feel like the Encanto soundtracks and Mufasa might be slightly more healthy.
Yeah, probably.
Although, in fairness, there is still angst in Encanto. It's what underpins the entire story.
Yeah, sure.
Correctly, that sounds good. Books. Do you have a favorite book? What was the last good book you read?
I think some of the last good books that I read last couple years are the Copenhagen Trilogy. Have you heard about the Copenhagen Trilogy? Oh, it's amazing. It's a memoir. It's like a three-part memoir, Danish, written by Tove Ditlevsen. And I listened to them on audiobook, and I had no idea what I was getting in for. And so if you're going to read them, I totally recommend that you read them like that, like no idea what's coming, because it was just like took me on a journey that was like, wow, I was expecting some like nice little memoir. I had not read up at all about these books, but totally devoured like the whole thing. And it really like took you on an emotional roller coaster. I love memoirs. Also, I Am by Maggie O'Farrell was amazing. Really powerful book, incredible writing. I'm a big memoir fan.
I like that. So it's the Copenhagen Trilogy. That's like you say, that's a memoir. So that's a kind of true story. So I'm always,
well,
a lot of the
is
time,
it a total memoir? Is it? I don't know. Actually, now I'm totally second guessing myself. It can't really be, right? No. But it's like a memoir-esque, like a story of a woman over three parts of her life. So not actually, yeah.
Because a lot of the time when I ask this question, I then write them down as future presents for my wife because she likes good book. So I will write, it's her birthday really, next month.
But they're really depressing. I mean,
okay.
I don't know if they're the best like presents.
Well, she lives with me, so I mean, talk about hitting a woman when she's down already to do the job. No, I'll check them out though. They sound really good.
They're really good.
And then is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Claire Vocals Edelmeyer?
This one was hard because I feel like I put so much, like, I write, you know, I stitch everything about myself. Like, my stuff is so autobiographical that I'm like, okay, what am I going to say? Well, one thing is that the Flickr community knew about me, but the Instagram community, for example, the Stitch World does not know, is that I'm an only child. But when I was a kid, like, I considered my dad's camera to be like my little brother, because he was like, always had to be there, was like this pampered little, you know, thing that I wasn't allowed to touch. My dad like took his camera very, very seriously. And like, then kindly enough, it was like when I went to Brooklyn, was like kind of getting into photography, my dad like by then had gone digital and gifted me this like beloved camera. And that is literally like what started me kind of becoming an artist, really, because I started just walking around Brooklyn with my camera and like discovered that like it became a part of my life. Like it became a practice of something that I did like incessantly all the time. And yeah, the rest is history then after that.
Have you ever thought about like stitching on photographs, going in that kind of direction?
I have, yeah, I've thought of that. I've only done it once before. I made like a little thing for my husband where I kind of stitched into a photograph of us. I've also once like interpreted a photograph onto like a vintage napkin. It's definitely something I would like to go into at some point.
It sounds like there's a natural overlap. I mean, your photographs are so good as well. It would be interesting to take that version of storytelling and blend it with like your textile version of storytelling to see what you come up with.
Yeah, thank you. I would definitely love to explore that for
sure. Curious little vignettes for sure. Hey, Claire, thanks for having a Needle Exchange.
Well, thank you. This was an absolute pleasure.